Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Welcome back to episode 14 of the Ice Lab Podcast. Mr. Marinaro, how are we doing this evening, buddy?
It's going good. September 9th already. Somehow we are approaching the middle of September already. It's absolutely insane. But as we get picking up here over the next couple of weeks, it's going to go even faster.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. The season's about to start. First event this week, and first senior international event starts officially this week in Lombardia. So good luck to our friends Nick and Lolo and Alicia and Paul there. And also want to give a quick shout out to our junior ice dancers, Natalie D'Alessandro and Bruce Waddle, for their gold medal performance last week. Congrats, guys. You guys deserved it. You guys looked amazing. And good luck into your next event. And I think what's up next? Russia next week?
Russia next week, yes.
So good luck to our athletes there. Can't wait to see how you guys do, and can't wait to get our season underway as well, eh, Mike?
Yes, definitely. Looking forward to get the competitive juices flowing again, for sure.
Awesome. Same here. So we want to get into it. We've got a really special guest on today. We're really excited for you guys. So our guest today is the Lou Marsh Award winner, 10-time Canadian champion, 3-time world champion, multiple silver medalist and Olympic champion, Mr. Patrick Chan. Welcome to the podcast, buddy. How's it going today?
Very good, boys. Nice to hear you.
Thanks for coming on, buddy. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, how's things been going, man? What's life been like? We see you on social media and stuff, but I haven't seen you in a rink in a long time. What's going on?
Yeah, because social media is only but the truth, right? Yeah. It's been pretty wild. Like, it's been a roller coaster of just like recovering from, you know, being a competitive athlete and trying to set foot at home and create a home. And then the pandemic kind of hit, and it kind of threw all the plans out the window. So it's been a mix of like weeks of feeling lost and feeling unsure about like what's up next, what's my purpose. And then also being very excited about the future, and what's coming up.
Beautiful. Well, let's jump right into it. You have trained with many, many legendary coaches over the years. Let's start with Ozzie Colson. He obviously played a huge role in your adolescence. What did he teach you about the sport? And how did he help you develop such a passion for figure skating?
Yeah, so Mr. Colson was quite the character. Like, you'd have to meet him to really understand like his aura and his like presence. You know, like he was a type of guy, like always dressed to a T, like dressed really well to come to the rink, like classy kind of guy, traditional, always had a golf hat, like a different colored golf hat every day. So you'd hear like, I would like look for the top of his hat, like bobbing into the rink through the windows, like at the cricket club. And, it was like scary. Like sometimes I felt like, oh, nervous, like, oh, he's coming, he's marching in. Like, so he definitely had this presence, you know, almost you could say eccentric. But my mom was like, I was so young at the time, like, I didn't know that how good of a coach he was. But over time, you know, you just kind of go along for the ride. And I was doing what my parents were telling me to do, and what my mom was like pushing me to take more lessons with Mr. Colson. And they were scary. Like they definitely were extremely challenging. I remember the first few lessons we didn't jump at all. Like, I think my skating skills were so poor, that he really identified that. And we spent hours and hours. I'll never forget just doing crossovers over and over again, like 30 times around the circle. And he's just like, He's like, okay, check, like posture. Oh, your arm's dropping. Lift your arm up. Like constantly just like berating me as I'm skating around in circles and like my arm's burning, my leg's burning. And then giving me some of the hardest choreography, like for like, I was pretty juvenile. Like I was like the lowest level, like, and he was like giving me like movement and choreography that like, I don't even think senior skaters were doing like as complex of choreography. And I'll always remember, I'll tell the story a lot where, you know, judges would come in and watch me skate and watch my program. And one of the notes all the time was like, we don't know when his footwork is starting because he's got so much choreography that it's like, you don't even know where the beginning of the solo was. They were like, could you like add like even a stop or something like before the footwork? So that's the type of like Mr. Colson was like an overachiever and like, and had so much passion and almost like instilled it into me, because I was just very good at doing what I was told to do. And, but he really pushed me to my limits at such a young age, which, you know, some people could argue was maybe too soon and unconventional and maybe not correct in some views, but, it definitely produced a lot of results. That's for sure.
Well, I think you could watch any of your programs and take it, the jumps and the spins out. You don't know when the footwork starts, man, even in senior. So that was obviously instilled right from the beginning. And that makes so did you just find even with other coaches that you had more of an attention to detail because of that? Or was that still along with like your other coaches that you had past himself? Or was that just more into you right away?
I think it was. Honestly, he like threw everything at me. And if you, there was some good ones and some bad ones. There was like some programs that were just like, it was a steep learning curve. So I was like failing a lot at the very beginning, like falling on choreography and just the skating portion of the program, let alone the jumps. And so sometimes I questioned like his way of doing things, but I think there was obviously, like method to the madness. And he, you know, like made it so difficult that everything else just felt easier. Like that's basically the best way I can describe it, is like, I didn't have a necessarily conscious decision or a conscious awareness of what I was doing and like that I was improving my skating skills and my rockers and counters are getting better. No, it was just purely like, holy smokes, this is so hard, that like he set the bar so high that everything else just felt easy after that. And I think it prepared me, like as I got further and later on working with, you know, some of the best choreographers in the world, like Laurie Nichol and David Wilson. I think it really allowed me to be adaptable at such a young age and just like listen, absorb, and just try to figure out a way to do it, even if it felt uncomfortable, because I've been uncomfortable doing choreography for the past decade. So it felt like a breeze after working with Mr. Colson.
So there's hope for us. You weren't born this beautiful, majestic skater that you are. It was learned, eh?
Oh yeah, definitely not. No, yeah. No, it's not like I came out of the womb knowing how to skate with blades on my feet. No, not at all. It was a process. I will tell you, there's videos. I have videos. There's videos on YouTube. Somehow I got uploaded. I don't know why, but there's like videos of me at 8, 9 years old, and it's bad. Like the quality is, but I mean, I am like 8, 9 years old, but still, you know, you have such high expectation for like someone with my results and my accolades, like, but we all started somewhere. Like we all had to start at some like level. And, but I think there's like a short window of opportunity where you can kind of like focus in on exactly what can make you better. And some lasting, you know, abilities that stick with you. It's like riding a bike, like at the early age, and like, you'll never forget it. You could stop biking for 10 years and then pick it up 10 years later and be just as good. So I think it's similar. It was instilled in me unconsciously. And then it's one day people were like, wow, you're a pretty damn good skater. I was like, oh, I'm just doing what I've been told to do. Like, that's all I know. Yeah.
Is there a point where, like, obviously that's what one of your biggest things that you're known for is being one of the best skaters to have ever lived. Is there a point where you really felt like you started honing in on that more, like in junior or senior or like a certain year, where you really felt like you just let that fuel you more? obviously, like you just said, that was instilled in you and you never knew any different, but is there a point where it became like your fuel?
Yeah. So like Mr. Colson, Mr. Colson was a man who did do it all. Like he coached jumps, coached spins, did the program choreography, everything. And like, he's old school, you know, and even his choreography, I remember like some of the music he picked, you know, like some of the boys in my club were skating to like Backdraft and like skating to like soundtracks, like Hans Zimmer's soundtracks. I was just like, oh my God, I wish I could skate to that, because I was skating to like Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. Like it was just like so out of the norm for my age. And it was almost too mature. But then it really, like when I got to like working with Lori Nickel, like I think that's where things really like that really ramped up. And like everything just came together, like all the stars aligned when I started working with Lori, because she was the first choreographer I worked with other than Mr. Colson. And it almost felt like this like new toy and or this new like this whole new world. And Lori like has so much experience working with like Michelle Kwan and so many other skaters that I had full trust in her, and she had like this like certain she had good taste in like music, and she knew exactly what music I should skate to and what choreography to give me as a, you know, 13-year-old going into the senior international events. Like, how do I make Patrick look mature as a skater? How do I take advantage of his skating skills that Mr. Colson has nurtured? And how do I use that? I think it was a blank canvas for Lori, and it just worked out so well. And yeah, I think the first program we did together was Four Seasons. And yeah, and that's the program I ended up winning my first national title with. So that just tells you something, that, you know, there was method to the madness. I don't know, obviously Lori and Mr. Colson didn't like plan it out, but it's just Mr. Colson really just gave me the building blocks, the foundation to be solid, so that no matter who I worked with, it was just like, it would be great no matter what, because I had so much going for me, really.
How many years did you work with Mr. Colson for?
Oh, so I want to say I started working with Mr. Colson when I was, I want to say like 8, 9. I was skating with another coach at Upper Canada College. Her name was Mei Yang. And it's actually Dylan Moskovich's first coach as well. And then I moved to Mr. Colson. I did a tryout. He accepted me into his school, quote unquote. And then I worked with him until he passed. So like, I think I was 9, 10, 11. I must've been 12 or 13 years old. Because that would have been, I'm just thinking, 1990, 2013. Yeah, because I won my first national title in 2008. So, anyways, it's hard to remember. But basically, yeah. So 8 years old till, like, I want to say, like, 14, 13 years old. Yeah.
That's awesome. So now, obviously, going through that, do you think that's a very impressionable age for skaters? You know, for that same reason, for those building blocks, like of building what you want to be able to be successful past that age. You know, we obviously see it with the Russians, some of the Russian girls and other skaters are, you know, insanely good by the time they're 13 or 14. But for other skaters, like, do you think that's like the very impressionable age of where you can build a lot of things to set themselves up later for their career?
Definitely. I think it's so important. I don't know what the age is specifically, but I think, yeah, you got to know early on. Like now I'm coaching figure skating and hockey. I can tell you very quickly if a skater has like not the physical ability, like for sure, that's pretty obvious. Most skaters can tell if they have what it takes in terms of skill and talent. But I think the big test is like your mental ability to push yourself and try the uncomfortable. And you know, Mr. Colson was tough. Like I was scared of him. And but I like somehow also my mom pushing me to to stick with it is a huge part. But yeah, I wanted to be better. I thrived, I think, in that environment of a little bit of fear, because you got to fear your coach. You can't be, your coach is like, it's not your friend. They shouldn't be your friend. They should be like someone you respect and you, that you like, but you respect, and you do, you don't want to like get on their bad side, because then you can do whatever you want. And that's the problem I see now, is that a lot of young skaters, they're like coming in for recreational skate, and that's different. You totally can do that. But I think if you're really striving to go to the Olympics and get to the world championships and be on the national team, like you got to have that self like drive that you want to do this, and you're choosing to be there, not your mom or your dad or your parents. You want to be there to be better. And like, I stuck it out. Like there was a long time with Mr. Colson where I was like, I would come home and be like, he's so mean. Like he's the worst. He's like, he said this to me. And like my mom was just like, I know, but you know, just stick with it. And you know, he doesn't mean those things. Like he's just trying to make you better. And he's just passionate. And yeah, it was an impressionable time, because like it, like I said, it instilled some of these skills, the stability I have on my blades. Like that's something that you can't teach, you know, later on at 13, 14 years old. It, like anything, languages and sport, like it's the earlier, the better.
How did you deal with the passing of your coach at such a young age? And how did you plan your next moves after that?
Yeah, that was a huge turning point, I think, in my career. And I was so young, like, I'll never forget. It was, you know, we had our annual show at the cricket club, and we lived down the hill from the cricket club. And I remember we went to the show. I went to the show, and the show was delayed because like, it's like a local show, but the show was delayed because Mr. Colson was supposed to make like an appearance and like sit in the front row, and they had a seat reserved for him, but he never showed up, and nobody knew, like, we tried to call him, we tried to like reach out to him, no answer, which is very unlike him. And on our way home after the show ended up happening, we went home, and as we're driving down away, turning away from the cricket club, and then we go down the hill to our condo, it's like, it's blocked off, like completely blocked off, both sides of the road, both directions. So we're just like, oh wow, like there must have been a huge accident. And so we did like the roundabout way and got home, and we're like, still had no idea. Like, we're just like, oh, there must have been a huge accident at the light, right at our condo. And we go home, we go to bed. And I think it was like middle of the night, or late in the evening, that the hospital called my mom, because my mom was on kind of like not power of attorney, but just like Mr. Colson's like emergency contact, and called my mom. And if we find out that he was like in a car accident at that intersection, like going to the rink. And so, yeah, it was hard, but that wasn't when he passed, but that was kind of the catalyst. And it just like, he was already what, like 89, like 90, I think 91. So, you know, when you're at that age and you go to the hospital, the risk is beyond the actual incident or the actual injury. It's, you know, the danger comes after, during the recovery, the post-op. So it was about like 2-3 weeks later that he passed away from complication, from a pneumonia, basically. And yeah, many older people die from pneumonia, you know, no matter, it's just hard when you're that age, your immune system's so weak. So I just remember I was like, it's hard to process. And you know, to be honest, my parents aren't the most like, we're not the most, I think the word is like emotional. We're not the most in tune with our emotions. We're very like, you know, my dad has a very like, doesn't show his emotions very much. He's a very nice person, but not an emotional person. And neither is my mom. So, you know, I just remember sitting in the living room, just like staring at a blank TV, just like, just trying to process everything and like what it means. And like, cause he was like, he wasn't just a coach, you know, he was like part of the family in a way, because he was older. So he needed a little more care than just any other coach. And we obviously got a little closer to him. And so it was, it felt like losing a family member. And it's, it really turned my whole world of figure skating upside down and like who to go, who to take from. It was just like, yeah, it threw a wrench at the plans big time. And it was so unexpected that we were kind of like stunned. And it took like probably 2 years for me to find like a solid place to train. But yeah, that's a huge turning point. You know, that could have been, could have gone so many different ways. But yeah, it went a certain way and it's not bad, but it was a certain, it definitely took me away from home. That's what it did, is that it made me look elsewhere. And I don't know if that was, looking back at it, if it was the best choice.
Yeah, well, it's a terrible thing to go through to begin with, you know, losing anybody who's close to you to begin with, especially somebody so obviously that close to you in the respect of somebody you respected so much and, like you said, close to your family. So that's a really hard age for that to happen to as well. But so you moved past that. You said it took about 2 years to find your, like, home, let's say, like your next real training spot. And then so where did that take you to, for our listeners that don't know, where was that next stop for you then?
Yeah, so right after, there was a coach, some people may know, his name is Shin Amano, and he was coaching at the Granite as well at the time with Mr. Coulson. And he was kind of the interim coach as we're trying to organize ourselves. And actually during, while Mr. Coulson was in the hospital, still recovering, Shin kind of took over. Then that only lasted barely a year. And then I went to Florida. I took from Don Laws, who is Scott Hamilton's coach, Michael Weiss. So some really big names, well-respected, very, very intelligent person, served in the military, like very, very like successful career. And yeah, so I was in Orlando, Florida for that. And so I graduated high school right around that time. And we basically packed my bags up and my mom and I went to Florida and we'd stay in hotels for like 2 weeks. Yeah, it was brutal. Just in a hotel room, sharing a room with my mom for 2 weeks. And like,
especially at that age, eh?
Yeah. It's not like, oh, it's not ideal. And you quickly like lose your patience. You're just like, and I think it really created cracks in the foundation, like deep cracks. And so, yeah, we really had to stick together, my mom and I, and like, oh my gosh, that's every time I talk about Florida, I'm just like, it gives me goosebumps still. Like, I'm just like, I don't think I could go back to Florida or Disney World for a long time because it was hard. It's just not an environment, a figure skating environment. It's not where ice people, most, no offense, but I feel like some people don't know what ice is in Florida, but you know, it's just not, ice sports and winter sports are not a big passion for Floridians. It's mostly retirees. So it just was, the coaching, the on ice coaching was great, but sometimes, you know, the off ice stuff, like the beyond the rink and the winding down part of training when you want to just like not think about skating, was, it was hard to find a good distraction. And then fast forward, we find, like, I don't know how fast you guys want me to go, but
whatever the main, okay, main parts for you, that's what, okay, we're here for.
So yeah, so then I was in Florida for Orlando for like a year and a half. Then Don kind of moved to a rink in West Palm Beach, which is like closer to the ocean, but still it was hard. It was just a hard place, hard environment to train because I just had no one else. Like, that's the thing between Mr. Coulson, I was very much his only student. He has some students on the side that he would work with part-time, but with Don, it was like I was the only skater that he had, basically. So every day, it was just like every hour that I skated was with Don, kind of. Maybe out of the 4 hours, it was maybe like 1 hour I wouldn't see Don. I would be working on my own. The rest would be like, he would be there. And he was a wonderful coach. One, like, we had some great conversations, like such a great like mentor, because he's just so intelligent. He read a lot of books. So he like had so many really cool, we had cool conversations. But eventually it like, it, even like our friendship between Don and I, like started to like, I will be honest. I wasn't the easiest skater to teach, you know, it came with a price. I think all the success, it, like, if you interview a lot of my coaches, they would be like, oof, man, that guy, the Patrick, man, that Patrick is, he's got a like short fuse, because, you know, I think mixed between not having a good environment, of skaters to push me, and no peers, and then mixed with just frustration of training, man, I just like, I lost it. And, I'd have the whole rink to myself. Like I would have private ice, but almost like that almost created more of a disadvantage and made training even harder. You guys would understand how hard that is. So I'd like act out, and like, finally Don was like, you need to go somewhere else. Like you need to go work with like, maybe go to Christy Crawl in Colorado Springs and at the World Arena. And I went for a practice, like 2 weeks just to try it out. Loved it. Like I loved the environment. Like you had some of the top US skaters, like Ryan Bradley. I think Jeremy Abbott was there, but I think he had left already at that point. Ryan Bradley, who else? Max Aaron was there. Ryan Yonke. So like some really good skaters to look up to and to like push me. And so we decided to like stay a bit longer. And then finally Don was like, one day just sent an email to Skate Canada, to Mike Slipchuk, and said like, I no longer want to work with Patrick. Super out of the blue. Yeah, we were just like, oh my god. Like my mom was like, wait, what? Like, we're planning to go back to Florida like in a week. And like Don was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I think like that's maybe that I was that much of a nightmare skater, like student. He was like,
that's wild.
Oh my god, my life, my all this weight's off my shoulders now that Patrick's gone. Like I don't want him to come back. So
but maybe it was also just to like push you, because you knew you needed to be where that was. So maybe it was the final straw to like, okay, you know what, I'm just telling him he's there.
Yeah. And that's the honorable thing. Like that's the thing, Don, that's something Don would do, is like take the high road and be like, hey, no, my ego's not damaged here. I'm like happy as a clam. Like I know what's good for you. You go do this. Like almost like forced our hand. And it was the best decision, because man, like then that's when my career really took off, you know, internationally. And Christy was wonderful. Like just the structure, you know, the structure was amazing. I convinced Christy to come out of retirement, because she was semi-retired at that time, just doing dartfish on the side. And I'm like, and then I show up and I'm like, hey, want to go to 2010 Vancouver with me? Like, she's like, whoa, wait a second. Like, I like told my husband I was going to be home a lot more, but obviously not anymore. So, but it was such a great team, like so many great coaches that like it's really a village. You know, like I felt like the village came together and like really helped me become the skater I became, and brought me to that next level, like to be that competitor, that fierce competitor you need to be on the international stage. You know, I walked out of that rink, I would go to my events feeling like on top of the world, like feeling confident. You know, the altitude training helps a bit too, feeling really good. But also like just having a solid team behind you. I've never felt so comfortable with my support team.
Well, that was where you actually really started revolutionizing our entire sport too. You were the first male skater to really bring the technical aspects, you know, start doing two quads all the time, and your technique and your other side of it, your skating skills. So obviously if you're feeling on top of the world, that you had every right to be, because you were on top of the world, man. That's insane. But do you ever look back at that? Because you literally changed our sport. It was after that, like for those few years, you were so dominant about it. And then you look now and it's completely changed since then. Like nobody was really doing that at the time.
Yeah. I think I remember competing at 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, and like, yeah, like Evgeny was the only guy doing quad, really. Evan Lysacek won the Olympics with only triple axel, like, but skated phenomenally, like clean, not one mistake, perfect. And then you go fast forward to 2014 and you have like the top six men doing quads, you know, that's, yeah. So you see the huge jump. And honestly, it didn't feel forced. Like, it was just such a good progression of just like, okay, yeah. Like, it was really just checking off the boxes. After 2010, I felt like I had a disappointing result of, I came fifth. And then after that, like that summer, I started, like, Christy was like, she was like on top of it. She's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Like, this is the plan. And this is your goal. Like, I see you landing a quad. And then frig, like, we were ahead of schedule, like 2-3 weeks into the summer, I'm landing quads consistently. And then we're like, you know what? Like, we start the Grand Prix season, it's going really well. And then we go to nationals, and I'm like 2011 nationals. And I was like Christy was like, you got nothing to lose. Like, you got really nothing to lose. This is the place to try it. If you're going to do two quads. And it felt so good. Like, I felt so, like, I've never felt so confident and so power. Like, I felt like I was invincible in a way. And like, you know, that's like must what Tiger Woods must feel like at the Masters, or like Roger Federer, Tom Brady. Yeah, exactly. I just, like, for a short moment, a short few years, I felt like on top of the world. But then quickly things, you know, caught up to me. And I think having dominated that much, like, I was winning events by 20, 30 points. It almost became a detriment. I think it almost, like, it created a specific narrative in my mind and a certain expectation, a very high expectation. So that when the minute I faced some sort of challenge or a rivalry or someone testing me, I kind of crumbled, because I was like, whoa, like, I don't know what it's like to fight for anything. I'm just so used to being on that level, that much higher than everyone else, but it doesn't take long for people to catch up, you know? And Yuzuru Hanyu was the first junior skater coming up, you know, early on, like in 2012, 2013, coming up quickly and caught up fast. In the span of 3 years, he caught up. So, yeah.
That's crazy. You know, the 2011 long program is one of my favorite programs I've ever seen you skate, besides your Hallelujah one. And that was actually the first nationals I was ever at. That was my first novice nationals.
It was Victoria, right?
That was Moncton.
Moncton. Okay.
Yeah. So that was my first nationals. I remember watching you skate that long, and it was incredible.
Obviously, it's a Phantom scoring. Of the Opera. Was it?
Of the Opera? No, the one after.
Oh, the one after.
The red shirt.
Oh, that's Aran the one Juez. I remember. Aran Juez. Oh, yeah.
That one's my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. Beautiful. That was Lori Nicol that did that program. And it's, one of my favorites for sure as well.
Was that the year you hit the 300 at nationals?
I think so. Yes.
That was pretty wild.
I was.
So then, obviously, you've been to three different games. So, you know, how did those experiences change? Obviously, your first one was at home, was pretty amazing. You said you weren't overly pleased with your fifth place finish, and then you go into the next games, you met, like, gold medal contender, come second, and then you have 2018. How did those all differ? You know, just experience wise and mentally wise, because those all have to be completely different.
Oh, so different. The event feels kind of the same, because it's just like top notch quality, like, event organization. But man, mentally, physically, like, so different. 2010, I was like, I put so much pressure on myself, because I'm like, I'm Canadian. I deserve to be on the podium in Canada. Like, gosh, I just put so much expectation on myself, to the point where I think I froze. I got like paralysis through analysis, because I was just so in my head. And then Sochi, going in as a defending world champion, like, once again, I'm in a pressure filled situation with high expectations. And I think I didn't really understand until I watched the Olympics this year in Tokyo, 2020, how, like, how much pressure that is when you go in as a high favorite, like on television. I can only imagine, you know, the commentators were expecting of me, because I had been undefeated going into 2014 Olympics, all season, won all my Grand Prix, Grand Prix final, four continents, nationals, like untouchable. And then I get to Olympics and it was just like a really rude awakening of just, over analysis, because I almost felt like everything had to be perfect. And I felt like I was being like caught up. Like it's like the classic, like looking behind your back being like, oh, he's getting closer. Oh man. Like I got to pick up the pace. Oh no. Like his pace is faster. Oh no. He's neck and neck with me. Like that's literally what I felt like, is that every practice and then every program was like, he was getting inching closer and closer to me and like to beating me. He being Yuzu. And it just cracked under the pressure. And, you know, there's no shame in it, but at the time it was like, I felt a lot of shame and just like, and like really pissed off at myself and hard on myself, because I just like, you know, you lose all concept of like perspective and what the games are really about. I got so caught up in being number one and having to stay number one that it again, like I needed to just someone to just take my shoulders and like give me a good shake and just like rattle my brain a little bit, because I was just so like obsessed with being perfect, because I knew how close the margin was getting. And you know, it came down to like I made a mistake in the short program. Yuzu skated clean going into the long. He was skating first before me, and he had made some mistakes. And, you know, at the time my coach, Kathy Johnson, she kind of told me like right before I was stepping on the ice, right before they were going to announce my name. Then she looked at, because I don't watch skaters before me. I just try to really stay focused on what I have to do. And like, right before I get on, she's like, she tells me, she's like, Yuzu made a mistake. Not like she worded it like, you've always wanted a gap, or like a gap, a window of opportunity. This is your opportunity. And that's kind of how she said it. And it kind of just like, I don't know if it was the right thing to say at the time. I don't blame her ever for that, but it just like, it kind of made me like tighten up all over again. And it was just a constant battle, a mental battle. And you guys know the feeling of just like waiting for your turn to skate. And there's just feels like the end of the world sometimes. So I left with a silver medal, which is pretty darn good. And like, it's so ridiculous thinking about like, oh, like I'm such a loser for coming second. Like, what? But you know, when you're in it, you're just so obsessed of being like, yep, you gotta, like, it's gotta be perfect. I still find myself now, like 3-4 years out of the sport, I still find myself kind of having that bitter, like perfectionist mentality. And then finally 2018, gosh, 2018 was so different, because I was going in knowing I was not going to win a medal in the individual event. You know, I was so out of the game. I was, you know, instead of six guys doing quads now, it was like eight. It was like the last two flights of the men's event was, everybody was doing quads. So I was going in just like, I had already felt a bit of burnout mentally. I knew it was going to be my last. And honestly, I was kind of had the mentality of like, why should I go? My first two, I was going like, I had a chance of being on the podium. Now I know I don't have a chance. Like, and that was just like my mentality going in. I was like, there's no point. Why should I go? And literally it took a village to like, it took Skate Canada. It took all of my teammates, Scott Moyer, Eric Radford, all those guys to call me and be like, how are you? First of all, like always checking in, but like, kind of like get your ass in gear. Like you got to do this. Like you're coming. Cause you know, we had a really, really good chance of winning gold as a team. And I just, you know, again, me being a crazy athlete, mental brain of an athlete, I was just like, oh, team event, that doesn't count. Like I still catch myself. I'm like, I'm not really an Olympic champion, but really I am. Like, it's just, but in your figure skating mind. Yeah. It's just in your skating mind. We're such traditionalists that we're like, oh, like, team event, like that's not the purest kind of gold medal. But man, I'm so glad I went, and I'm so glad I like pulled up my pants and like went and experienced it, because it really was, I think maybe the saving grace at the end of my career. It was just like the perfect ending to the cherry on top of a very successful career.
You definitely are well-deserved Olympic champion, buddy. I remember arriving to the games. It was about my first day there. Team event was started. Having a front row seat in the Kiss and Cry, watching you guys, even just from the outside, having a front row seat was quite the special moment to watch probably one of the greatest figure skating team of all time, for sure. Yeah. And you guys are such a close-knit group. How was that experience? Just because you guys were all such close friends, I think, was a little bit different than some of the other countries. You guys were definitely a very, very close-knit group.
Yeah, the whole team was just like had each other's back. And like, you know, I skated a really good short program, and then I made a mistake in the long program. Oh no, wait, I can't remember. Did Kevin skate the program? I can't remember. But I just remember I like made a mistake in my program. And like, and I just remember Scott being like, hey man, it's all good. He's like, this is why this is a team event. Like we're here for each other. And like, man, to feel that in figure skating, where you're like your whole life, you train by yourself, your whole life, you're on your own. You're pushing yourself all by yourself. It's so comforting. It's like, it was like a little taste of what a team aspect would have been. You know, if I had played hockey or played a team sport, it was the closest thing to feeling that, and feeling that support, or just like, you know, someday, like we just, some of us have good days and some of us have bad days. And luckily it was like an ideal situation where you had Scott and Tessa kind of filling in the gaps when you're not performing. So it was just like a win-win, honestly. It was just like, we felt so good, and it felt so good to finally, like, we all had known each other for so long. We'd all literally grew up from the junior ranks, you know, Eric, Scott, even Caitlin Osmond, like we all kind of grew up together. And it was so nice to like see, like look down the podium and see all your friends like holding up a gold medal. You're just like, man, we spent like our whole lives trying to get this, and we finally got it. So yeah, it was immensely rewarding. And then everything else after that was, I couldn't care less about my individual event.
That's awesome. It made it, like, to me, watching that event, especially even compared to the first time, I think because it was the first event, so nobody really expected everything of it in the whole sense, like not just the Canadian team, but like the whole world watching it. And you could definitely see in 2018 as an outsider that it really brought a lot more of the Olympic spirit to figure skating. I found like you got, like, there was so much more, like you said, like everybody was there for each other, and you could see, like, even, you know, Mike and Kirsten and everybody else on the Canadian team being there watching the event, you know, being in the Kiss and Cry. Like, it really brought that whole what the games is about, bringing the world together. So I think
it was a very Canadian thing to do. Like we just felt so much pride, and yeah, like felt very much like we as a collective group, we're representing Canada and bearing that pressure. Like we're all supporting each other, we're all like lifting this block of pressure together. And that's a pretty powerful thing. It's a pretty powerful thing of like feeling a collective effort towards one goal. It's a very unique feeling, and I'm so grateful. I remember when the team event first came out, I was like, oh, like this is such a joke, like what is this for, this is such a gimmicky thing. And then it ended up being like the greatest experience. So yeah, always expect the unexpected.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We had some pretty fun time celebrating those gold medals in Pyeongchang. Thank you. Thank you for those moments. And thank you for letting me share in those post gold medal celebrations with you, buddy. I will never forget those times.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, because they won't happen again. It's quite a special thing. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you've moved from the sport, You know, you're older, and like you said, you've been even picking yourself apart of things you used to do or things that you still do. So, you know, a lot of people have probably asked you from such an elusive career, you know, what advice do you have for younger skaters and especially for parents? Like what, you know, what would your advice be to a parent who really, you know, their kid or their child really loves skating and is doing well or wants to be the best that they can at the sport or anything in general as well? Like this can relate to all different sports, but what would you give for parents' advice?
I think what I would tell parents, especially nowadays, under current times, like social media is like such a huge player in child psychology, I think, and athletic development at young ages. Like there's so many aspects that are so different than when I grew up. Like kids are expectations are so much higher, let alone not even expectations that people are putting on the parents putting on the child, just the child themselves putting expectations who they should not be experiencing any sort of like pressure or expectation at such a young age. Like kids are supposed to be having fun. And I think we're missing that. I think we're missing the whole reason behind sport has become a business. It's become like, oh, like gold medals equals dollar signs. Like that's kind of the mentality now. And I think we're losing that essence of what sport is all about. And it's like the feeling of your great, what you can do and how you can be better, the feeling of achievement, the feeling of, you know, picking yourself up after making a mistake. There's so many little like fun little like mini games, you know, in the development of being an athlete that we're now like so focused on what is my kid going to be in 10 years? Is he going to get a scholarship? Is he going to be a world champion? Is he going to be national champion or she's going to be national champion? That like the poor kid is like the emotional side of the athlete is gone. Like a lot of kids, unfortunately, I think don't have fun anymore. And they just like, they feel the pressure from the parents or not enough. Like, I think sometimes some parents are just so laid back that the kid just is like showing up, just to hang out with their buddies. And, you know, I remember growing up, my mom was like, I stood around talking to someone for longer than 1 minute, my mom would be marching down from the lounge, like coming down, knocking on the glass, being like, excuse me, like I'm paying money here. Like get going, like get moving. So I think there's just the scales have tipped, you know, one side and then to the other. We got to find some sort of balance now where, you know, first of all, the kids got to want to do it. I see a lot of, I coach kids that I'm just like, are you sure you want to be doing this? And you know, sometimes the parents are too involved or not involved enough. And so I don't know what my advice is after all that is maybe just like do everything in your power to give them the best for your child. My mom found the best coaches. We moved to Florida because we weren't sure if that was the right choice, but it was a choice that it was a good option. And then that took us down another path and then another. So you can't plan too far ahead. You can't think about, you know, where the results or what's going to be the result of all this sacrifice. You can't think of it that way. You got to just think of it as like one journey to the next and then to the next and always check in, like see like, is this something you want to do? And I think that's even something I wish my parents did a little more was, you know, sit down and ask like, hey, how is this feeling? How is Florida feeling? I just don't remember ever having those questions asked. So, you know, treat kids as adults sometimes, like treat them as adults as in like speak to them and ask them questions, like really like tough questions and make them think about, make the choices that they want, not necessarily what the parent wants.
Yeah, my mom, you know, I got to give a shout out to my mom. My mom has done that since I started skating. She still does it every year. Ask me if I still like what I'm doing. And I said, Mom, I still love skating. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it sucks. But I still love skating.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a big, very important thing. like you said.
And it's so like, that's the core of your values, you know, that's the core of everything you do, like all the training you do, all the sacrifice, because at the core, you have such a strong, like, belief in your love for the sport. So I think that's so important. And not, I think a lot of kids don't get to experience that, which is so unfortunate, because, you know, loving your sport is so, so special.
After giving all this parent advice, will you be taking your advice anytime soon there, Patty?
I'm gonna put him in some sport that's gonna, you know, get him, like, I'm just talking about results here. I want him to get a scholarship. I'm not paying for his education. Like, put him in tennis or like golf, like something that makes some dollars. But no, all joking aside, no, I'm just so excited, yeah, to have, you know, a boy of my own, and just to like teach him sports and just like the love of it, and how exciting it can be. And like, you know, if he smiles every time he hits a tennis ball, or the minute he touches the ice, like, that's all I can ask for, you know, that's all I can really ask for. And that he's healthy. So.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the, you know, we just watched Tokyo Games and keep watching, you know, other sports that are going on right now. And, you know, that's one of the things. You're completely right. There's a lot that sports has changed to dollar signs, especially with endorsements and social media, like you said. But, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I watch those things. I watch those sports. I watch the Olympic Games. And I just love sports even more after watching it. Like, it just makes me want to do my own sport. Or, you know, you forget how much that, especially after such a crazy year with COVID, how much that sports brings our world and our people together. Like, I know this is a... Mike and I literally played, obviously we're very good, very, very good friends from figure skating, but we played disc golf almost every day together. And, you know, we just enjoy that. And that's something that, you know, brings relationships. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's such an amazing part about sports, is what it brings outside of the actual activity that you're doing.
And that's what I remember the most out of all those experiences, like all those Olympic Games, is honestly the friends, like the interactions I had with certain people and at certain moments. And that's not something you can buy or you can like manufacture. It's just like, you're just so lucky to be in the presence of so many other great athletes who have a common goal. And I'm still friends with some of those guys. And, you know, you have a bond for life, even if you don't keep in touch as often. You're bonded for life in a way, and it's so important. That is the essence of the Olympics, is the friends and the camaraderie that you experience. I would equate it. I imagine, you know, I never went to university or like was part of a fraternity, but it's like kind of feels like that, where you're just like. You just like feel like a collective, like so much energy in one spot, in one place. It's it gives you goosebumps every day.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I can't thank you enough for being on here, man. This has been such a great talk.
Yeah.
So wise. So wise, man.
Couldn't have said that 3 years ago.
Drop in the knowledge, and we would love to have you back, Patty. Anytime. You're available, definitely in a month or so, in a couple months, we would definitely love to have you on again.
I'd just have a crying baby in the background.
Yes. That's fine. He can join in. It's okay. Join. Yeah. So,
but best of luck, eh? Best of luck for you.
We're not done yet, buddy. We're not done yet.
We're done the main talking stuff. We're going to hit some fun stuff now.
Okay.
So we, as a collective, we have our Ice Lab podcast book club. So do you have any book recommendations for our listeners?
Oh my God. I should look at my bookshelf. You know what? I'd love, I'll tell you two books right away. Tuesdays with Maury. It's a really good book. I think it's written by Mitch. It's who? Mitch
Album.
Mikey. Album. Yeah.
I got it right beside me.
Yeah, great book. And then A Thousand Splendid Suns is also a really good book. Like, yeah.
What about, I remember you recommended a book to me a couple years ago. I have not read it. I'm trying to remember.
The Rise of Superman?
Rise of Superman. Yes, I'm going to write that one down. I want to check that out. The Rise of Superman.
very different type of book. That's a more scientific book. It's great for athletes. Yeah. It's talks about just talking about the scientific research and having followed some really extreme athletes. So you're talking big wave surfers, free climbers, free divers, you know, these extreme sports where it's like life or death. You make a mistake, you're dead. It's fascinating how it's just talking about how these people function under such high pressure situation. It was a very comforting book for me because I read it right before my last national championships. Actually, I finished it right before before I won my 10th title, and it really lent a lot of perspective. And I actually used a lot of it made me a strong believer in breath work leading up to the event, because one of my most nerve-wracking moments is like after the 6-minute warm-up, waiting for your turn to go. It feels like an eternity sometimes. And it's such a good breath work is such a good way to make time pass, you know, faster, and control your heart rate so that you're not, you know, exhausted by the time you get on the ice. You know, I'll never forget a Grand Prix final. I was rocking in my chair, waiting for my turn, just like thinking about like, oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if I fall on this? And I like got on the ice, they call my name, and I'm like, my legs are jello. Like I had no energy because like I had just been like thinking and like burning so much like glucose, just thinking and stressing. My heart rate's like at 150, like constant. So it just like, yeah. And then I was like, what the heck happened? What is this? And then someone told me, they're like, yeah, you need to like control your breath. Like you need to control your heart rate, buddy. Like you're like using up all your reserve by the time you get on the ice. So it really opened my eyes a bit too late to like the mental side of skating and the preparation and what you can do to be proactive.
Beautiful. Well, let's finish it off with some rapid fire questions, some nice, light, fast speed questions for you, Chitty. Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. What is the one thing you always have in your fridge at all times? Looks at the fridge.
Eggs.
Eggs.
Okay.
What is your favorite video game of all time? Classic.
NHL. EA Sports, NHL.
Nice. Like the older ones or the newer ones?
Specific year?
All of them. All of them?
Oh.
2007. 2007.
2009 was the last really good one for me. And then it gets so complicated with so many different things you can do. Oh, my man.
The amount of controllers I've thrown.
I miss the days of just hitting O to shoot. Like just holding it. Like those were the days.
2007 on the PSP, the last made portable hockey game. Hasn't been one since.
It's probably worth a lot of money now.
Yeah, it would be for sure. All right, so who was your favorite non-figure skating athlete as a child?
Oh, that's too easy. Roger Federer. Nice. Just like, man, he's my hero. Like, just such a class act, such a beautiful, like,
he's a beautiful man.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. Yeah. Beautiful like striker. Like he can strike the ball so well. Like and moves like kind of like I'd like to equate it to like my skating. He's like such a good mover on the court. And but like man, like he's just such a stand-up guy. I was lucky enough to meet him at Rogers Cup in Toronto. And man, like the guy could have just walked away and he like took a solid like 5-6 minutes just to like talk to me about skating. And you know, he knows Stefan Lambiel. So it was really cool to connect with someone who's like had so much success but still is so humble.
I think he's in the top 3 to top 5 of the greatest athletes of all time on any sport note. Absolutely. Like you said, class act, and has stood the test of time with sport. He's been dominant for
no drama, man. Like the guy's no drama. Like doesn't get himself into trouble, especially nowadays. Like,
He used to do hip hop, I think, as a part of his training routine to work on his footwork, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 90.
I think I saw that too. Yes.
Yeah, I'm 95% sure. Yeah, that's pretty cool. You wouldn't expect a tennis player to be taking dance lessons, but it makes sense.
Makes total sense now. Yeah.
What was your best subject in school? Did you go to school?
Did I go to school? Barely. Best subject was lunch recess.
Nice.
No. I think, what was my best subject? It might have been social sciences, like either like geography or history, maybe, or yeah, something really off, like weird.
You don't sound too confident with that.
I was a steady like 60, 65, you know, 68.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Nothing wrong
with
that.
Yeah, it's a pass. A pass is a pass.
Pass is a pass. What is the best thing about surfing?
Oh man. Oh, so much. Okay, so I think surfing is like so many. It's just you're entering into a whole world, a whole nother world of sport, because you're dealing with Mother Nature and like the forces of nature. I love it because it's like, it's so intense and wild. And then it's so calm at the same time. Cause like you could be sitting and waiting for like a set to roll in and you're just like chilling and you're looking. Like I was in Tofino like last time, like a couple months ago, and I was surfing and I was out there and like, I saw like whales breaching out in front of me. Like it's just like unbelievable. Like you're just like in nature, like full stimulation of nature. And then it's just a feeling like surfing a wave that like is powered by, again, forces of nature. It's just so humbling. It's such a humbling sport. And just something so like, you feel so badass when you're like standing up on a wave, like, and you're like kind of like, you're not just riding like straight off, you're like you're riding along the wave. Like I still chase that feeling like every day. I just think about like wanting to go back and surf, because it's addicting for sure.
I want to do it. I haven't been before, but I really really want to do it.
I was just gonna say, in a couple years, if me and Trent make the trip up to Tofino, can you give us a couple lessons?
100%. 100%. I'll give you little pushes. Give you a little push.
Nice. Let's go.
Let's do it.
I've seen you've been rocking the mustache lately. Does it give you extra strength?
Sure does.
I thought so. Heck yeah. I thought so.
That's why I haven't gotten rid of it.
I know the mustache strength. It's real.
Yes. Mike says he knows the mustache strength because that's about the only thing he can grow on his face. So.
Oh, yeah. Please.
Hey, I'm 30 and I'm still trying to get this stuff to come in.
Yeah, I haven't shaved in a week and a half.
Yeah, Trent, you had a beard when you came out of your mother's womb.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, what was your favorite show as a kid?
Oh my god, I was a huge like Dragon Ball Z fan.
Yes.
Yeah, Dragon Ball. I had all the comic books, like one to like I think it was like 60, and they were all in French because I was like francophone. I remember Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon.
Pokemon. Yep.
And then like original Pokemon, and then like Gundam Z, like all those like Japanese anime. I remember I had like, I would go to Pacific Mall in Toronto and get all the fake DVDs, like the pirated copies.
Yes. Yeah, no, Dragon Ball Z is dope. I was lucky enough that one of our Japanese fans once threw me like a bunch of Dragon Ball Z stuff. So I have like plates, it's like a pencil case and a bunch of other water bottles and other stuff that's like all Dragon Ball Z. It's awesome.
I wouldn't have it anymore if that ever happened, because Liz would have gotten like, she's like, go donate it. She would have been like, get that stuff out of here.
I have a bunch of really,
I have left is like a Ferrari, like a Lego Ferrari, and that barely made the cut. Like she almost couldn't maybe get rid of it.
That's awesome.
And for our final question, what's your favorite sport outside of skating?
Oh, I have so many. Like playing or like watching?
Both. Playing. Both. Yeah, give us both.
Give us both.
Oh, man. Okay, I love watching hockey. Like, that's like, you know, Maple Leafs for life. And
yes, let's go. Oh, there it is.
This might be the year, boys.
This is the year. Let's go.
That's what we say every year.
Johnny T and the boys.
I think you'll have better luck jumping over to Seattle. You're pretty close to Seattle now. So I think Seattle's going to take a cut before the Leafs do, boys.
Oh, man.
No, it's not happening.
Okay, so yeah, obviously hockey. I'm watching tennis right now. Like, I'm loving the US Open. I've gotten really into golf actually lately, just because I love having it on the weekend on the TV. Just like, it's like nice to have on the background. And I'm like playing a lot more golf now too. So that's, you know, golf is very similar to skating, I find, because it's like, you're trying to fire multiple muscles and activate certain muscles in a certain way in like the span of 1 second. It's exactly like figure skating. You're trying to like do everything at once and try to synchronize everything into less than 1 second. Just immense respect for these guys. And then playing, I've actually started playing a little more like pickup hockey, like beer league hockey, which is so fun. It's like the closest thing to like the cardio of like competitive sport cardio. And then also like the intensity of just like being competitive. Like, it really brings out the competitive juice. I'm playing tons of golf, and yeah, like surfing, tennis. Lucky
you
to
do it all.
I do it all. Yeah, I do everything I can.
I'm pretty sure there's some nice disc golf courses. I think maybe you should check there that
is.
Out, eh, Mike?
There is. And one of my buddies here has an extra set, and we've like got to go. Like, there's a few around the city, and then there's a great one in Whistler apparently too.
Maybe after Skate Canada, I'm sticking around for a couple of days to do some choreography. I may have an extra set for you.
Choreography.
You go out.
Yeah, every morning, 9 a.m. Mike, get the disc golf. Let's go. When are you off the ice? When are you off the ice? I'm going to be a bad influence for you boys.
Yeah.
That's okay. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Yeah. We gotta have some fun sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Chitty, man, this has been so awesome. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. I can't wait for our listeners to hear this, dude. It's
good.
It's always great talking to you. It's always you teach a lot of life lessons. I feel like when we talk, you're a lot of heart to hearts. You're very very great person to talk to. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yes,
hey, no
thank
one,
you.
You've no had, one else you've... is. No one else wants to listen to me. So. I'm glad you guys think my stories are helpful, but no, it's you guys are awesome, and I'm so glad you're talking to athletes and really like these conversations need to happen more often, and you know, whether they're positive or negative or like sad or happy stories, I think it's so important to hear, to have like athletes' voices heard, because we don't even know like the some of the benefits of our experiences, because you're just so in it that you don't really have the perspective to appreciate what you've learned. So it's really, reflection is such a good part of being an athlete. And so thank you for the opportunity and your maturity to start this podcast and talk about it and talk about our feelings, because it's so important.
Yes, we definitely appreciate your time and learning about all your experiences. You have about 10 lifetimes of experiences you just shared with us, and we definitely appreciate it. And I think our listeners, as long as Trent and myself, definitely have learned a lot in the past hour. So we appreciate it, man.
Hey, and then I'll give you guys some advice about parenthood very soon.
Yeah, yes. That's the next episode is going to be parenthood.
Don't do it, guys.
You got it, Chitty. You got it.
Yeah, we thanks, boys. This. I appreciate awesome. It. Hey, many people have kids. I think we'll be able to figure it out, you know.
You got this. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, man. And to our listeners out there, go enjoy working out in your labs. And
peace and love, and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab Podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram at Ice Lab Podcast for more information and to stay up to date.